The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai. Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
How you doing? Welcome back, and I'm breathless after running all the way from one studio to the other. And it's only times like that that I realise that I'm 58. I see the Gay Pride Parade is expected to attract 40,000 attendees, which would be fantastic. Speaking of, Ronnie Whelan's with us in the studio. Ronnie, always good to see you. Also, we have with us John Delaney from the FAI, and Aidan Moran, who's a sports psychologist. Look, the whole talk at the moment is not about football. Unfortunately, that's the thing, the horrible thing about this Luis Suarez thing, that it takes the chat away from football. You were on the panel that night, weren't you?
No, I wasn't on the panel that night.
You saw it, though?
Yes, seen it. Very clearly, I think we all seen it. I don't know what goes through the lad's head.
Was it bizarre? I mean, was it just bizarre?
I asked a question on the TV, actually, the other night as well. If biting is okay in Uruguayan society, because the way the Uruguayan president or of the FA and the people involved in that squad were going, it happens in the game, it's not really a problem. And I'm thinking there's something weird going on here. But I don't know, there's something happening to the lad.
They used to say that about Ronnie, about Nobby Styles, because he used to take out the false teeth and put them in a pocket in his trousers, and he'd say that he'd come up and he'd bite you with his hand. He'd have them in his hand, squeeze them out of his pocket. It is pretty bizarre. I know you were driving up in Sligo and you were listening on the way in. John, can I ask you... I thought the FIFA thing was a bit of a rush to judgment. I know they were trying to appease everybody, and I don't mean the overall ban. Yeah. Obviously, there was going to be a ban for a game or two games, and maybe the rest of the World Cup. But that length of ban and the depth of decision, was that a rush?
I think the first thing, they had to make a quick decision for the World Cup, because obviously Uruguay played tonight, so they had to make a decision to ban him for the World Cup. I think it's very unlucky on Liverpool, Brendan. I'm not a Liverpool supporter, trust me.
I am.
Well, I'd be a Man United, but I think it's unfair to them. I said this to Ronnie earlier. They're paying a fella every week, and they don't have him out at the end of October. That's if he stays with the club. And not being able to train with his teammates and all. I think those parts I wouldn't agree with. I definitely wouldn't agree with Liverpool having the loss, and also not being able to train with his teammates. I don't think he can even go to matches or something. You know,
like, can't go in any stadium.
He can't even go to a football stadium, and that is severe. And I would agree. And I'm going to talk about psychology. He does need some kind of help, because it's his third time.
And he's had help, John. Sorry, excuse me. He's had help this year at Liverpool from the last
Brendan Rodgers got him help, and he seemed to be doing fantastic. He seemed to be doing really, really well.
Yeah, but you know, he needs independent help, Ronnie, I would say, and he needs now to take a good look at himself, because I know we talk about the kids and people say, well, kids won't, but like I've been doing a lot of presentations and medals this week, and the Biden thing down in Clonmel,
best players, etc. Yeah.
Best player of the year. That's a private joke. but all the talk amongst the kids was far as that one kid actually with a salt and pepper put in his hand, he said, would you buy that? So it does have a ramification. So FIFA had to go and deal with it. I think some parts of the ban are really not correct, particularly from Liverpool's point of view, and not being allowed into a stadium, not being allowed to train is a bit severe.
Are we just, Aidan, I'm going to come to you in a second because I want the expert opinion, but I want to get these guys' non-expert opinions about this, about the psychology of it first. Are we doing something here that might be actually a bit superficial? Because this was on TV, let's all talk about it and discuss it, but actually there's stuff like that goes on all the time that you don't see on TV.
Well, there was an accusation of a biting, wasn't it? Donegal and Dublin played a game of Gaelic football. There was an accusation about that, but it wasn't seen on television.
Yes.
And because it wasn't seen and it wasn't captured...
There's no evidence except he said, she said.
That's right, it gets brushed away. So because sometimes it's seen on television at the highest level, at a World Cup, which is understandable, it does get all the media attention, and then the sanctions are higher.
Yeah, but I'm even going further than that, John. I'm even going deeper than that, in that we're taking kids, and I mean kids... You know, I don't know when it was, a couple of years ago, when I saw that some 5-year-old was put under contract by Real Madrid. You know, we're taking kids, young teenage kids, and because they're taken out of the education system to play football, they have very little exposure to normal society. They live in a little bit of a bubble. If they're any way good at all, we exploit them by putting them on the pitch, and as long as they score goals, we really don't care what they do. Are we taking no regard that... If you take a kid and tell him he's magnificent, it doesn't happen just in soccer. I'm talking about in Gaelic as well, and in the entertainment industry. You take a kid, you tell him he's wonderful and that he can walk on water. And you expect them to have no psychological problems out of that.
But, Bren, that's been going the same for years. You can't just say it's only now. I was going away to Man United when I was 14 years of age.
I know, Ron.
I didn't go around biting people because I was...
No, you didn't bite them. But what I'm saying to you is there were scenes off the pitch that would happen in clubs that they wouldn't know how to behave. Or we mightn't have bit them, but there'd be some vicious tackles. Or I've heard of many stories of, see him... I'm going to do him when we play him in September. You know, that's not right.
I heard you talking to Paul earlier, and you were talking about why Suarez does this, and you said something about his girlfriend leaving, and I have to be the best player, and I have to.
But it's Pavlov's dog. His whole reward system in his life seems to be based on soccer. If he plays well, he gets to go to Europe, which means he gets his girlfriend. And if he gets his girlfriend, he gets to marry her, so he gets a wife. If he plays well there, he gets to go to Liverpool. If he plays well there and scores, he gets to do this, that and that. And that if you do that, if you put somebody in that position, that if they don't play well, if things aren't going well for them, and that can be a tackle, it can be just missing a pass, that you put them in under a psychological pressure that they're not mentally capable of handling. That's all I'm saying.
I think it's moved on from, like Ronnie, in your days, the money wasn't as big either.
No. Now the money. He did all right.
I remember Johnny Joy saying to me, there was no models in our day, you know, because the money's moved on huge now. Mm. And the attention, and listen, when we were kids watching, the only live game was the FA Cup final. That's the only game you saw live on television. Now it's wall-to-wall TV, it's wall-to-wall money, it's box office, it's pop stars, it's everything. And it puts an increased pressure and attention on the players that wouldn't have been as visible publicly now. And that is hard, I think, for any working-class lad, because most soccer lads come from working-class background.
But snooker players, a lot of entertainers, we come from working-class backgrounds.
And the temptations are there. A lot of spare time, and it is difficult. It doesn't mean you go biting people, but it has added huge pressures to the players' lives, and particularly, Brendan, then, when they stop earning. If you're on 50 or 60 grand a week, every week, and all of a sudden you just stop, it's done at 33, 34. To cope with that is very difficult.
Yeah, but it's try and stop when you've been on 400 quid a week and then stop. Yeah. That's difficult. If you're on 50, 60 grand a week, at least you've got a huge pot of money when you finish playing football.
Well, you should have.
Yeah, you should have. But going back a few years, that didn't exactly happen.
No, it didn't.
Nothing when you stopped.
And I also try and make the point to friends who say that, you know, footballers are paid far too much. There's a handful of footballers that are paid far too much. There's 20 teams in the Premiership division. And if you ask anybody, name me 30 players. They forget that each of those teams have a panel of 30.
Absolutely.
And that there's a lot of players just working and playing and then, for
and then
for
go down to divisions, go down to the Championship and all that.
It just gets pitiful. John, so psychology in the game, or psychological aspects of the game, what have the FAI got in place for the national team, for the national team?
Listen, we've child welfare officers, we have Don Givens and a number of scouts who work in England who deal with issues around players. We've had issues with clubs.
Do we have anybody professionally, a professional psychologist who's there to look after the mental well-being of footballers?
No, the answer is no. But what we do is we have people in England who, when issues do arise in clubs, and we have had issues where Irish boys have been bullied and we've had to deal with that. The clubs should deal with it, but we've had to step in, and actually, you know, parents who've been upset have come to us and we've dealt with it. But we don't have a psychologist who works full-time for the association to deal with players. We go and we talk to the emerging talent squads, the underage teams. We speak to them about, you know, health, diet, and, you know, preparing themselves correctly mentally for matches, and also their responsibilities.
All the physical end of it.
And the responsibilities that they have as representing their country. But when they go to the clubs then, Brendan, it's very difficult because they do go to clubs at 16 or 17 years of age. Mm. And it's then it's probably the responsibility of the clubs, because they mind them on a day-to-day basis. They only come to us, for, say, 3 or 4 days a week max. And it's very hard to change habits, you know, overnight.
That they've already learned in the clubs. Ronnie, I know you're still in touch with the modern game because I've often hear you talking about it a little bit. no, seriously, though. In your day, obviously, I didn't expect anything like a team psychiatrist or anything like that. But is there now?
Yes. Liverpool have a major one who travelled with England, didn't he, to the World Cup? Yeah. And I can't recall his name now.
Steve Peters.
I think most clubs would have something now. Now, somebody in the club.
Are we talking about a psychologist in the case of Aidan, whose gig it is? And Aidan, I'm going to come to you. I'm not ignoring you.
It's okay.
But whose gig it is to get sports people ready for the focus of a game? Or are we talking about a psychiatrist that if I actually have a problem, if I have a mental problem, and I don't mean that, you know, but if I'm under mental stress, that I have somebody I can go to within the club that is a private one-to-one?
Aidan would be better
Well, let me come to you. Just on Ronnie's point, I mean, what is interesting, there is a guy, Steve Peters, who works with Liverpool. But the interesting thing when Brendan Rodgers was talking about him was he said that he has hired a neurologist. So there's a lot of confusion. Now, Peters is,
sorry,
is a
I'm sorry.
Psychiatrist.
What is a neurologist?
A neurologist is somebody who studies nerves and so on. You know, the transmission of nervous impulses. So it's a highly confusing area because the manager who brought Steve Peters in actually wasn't describing what Steve Peters does. So there's a lot of confusion there.
Yeah, there is.
But the two points I think I would make very quickly. From the conversation. One is, I think everybody recognises that there's a mental side to sport. And the higher up you go, the more important it is.
Huge.
So at the top level, it's often the difference between winning and losing.
Huge.
And if you talk to top players, Ronnie or other people like that, I'm sure they'd all say it's really important. But here's the problem. When you ask clubs, what are they doing to work on this mental side? They say nothing in particular. They work on the physical, but they don't do anything on the mental.
And yet it's so crucial to success.
It's
absolutely essential.
But the second thing that I think is probably more relevant to the Suarez example, I hear people saying, well, it's too late. He's 27. You can't change him. And to some extent, there's an element of truth in that, because it's what he did was not rational. It was a deeply impulsive, emotional thing.
It was primal.
Which could go right back to, I don't know, what age he must have learned this. But here's the interesting point. At any stage, people can change. And a great example is Borg, Bjorn Borg. People look at Borg and say, there's the most cool player you ever saw in your life in tennis.
Correct.
In fact, when Borg was 12 years old, he was so bad at cheating and swearing and throwing his rackets, his parents and his club took away his racket and banned him from playing tennis. And in his autobiography, he says that 6 months when he was banned, he reinvented himself. He learned that you have to stay focused. And he was able to change from that early age. Luckily, he was young enough to make that change. But just think of all the players we see who've had the red mist descend. And you hear a manager saying, well, if you take that away from him, he won't be the same player. My attitude is, if you work hard on self-control and the mental side, you can be an even better player. That's the point.
And surely a job for somebody like you, is to get that red mist and convert it to some sort of positive. What happened last year then, Aidan?
They say he had some sort of counselling or some sort of help.
I don't really know, is the short answer. But I think what you're trying to do is replace a habit that he picked up many, many years ago with information saying, do you realise this is very bad for you and for the club and so on. And at that stage, it's like telling people, do you know the dangers of smoking, so why don't you give it up?
Ronnie,
and you need more help than that.
And the truth of it is, I mean, if it can take a player a year to recover from a cruciate ligament, you don't expect something that's embedded and habitual to go in a year. I can see you really, really annoyed you, didn't it?
Yeah, it annoyed me. But John says Liverpool. But I don't understand how somebody can keep doing the same thing. At 27 years of age, three times, if a kid bites someone and you chastise them, they stop. He's 27 years of age and he can't stop it.
He must have known in that instant. He must have known.
You could see it in his face.
He must have known.
You could see it in his face. He knew. What have I done?
You're on the world stage, not a reserve game in with nobody watching, the world stage. But he must have known the second that he did that he was in
the easiest thing, Brendan, in the world for a footballer to do, as Chiellini walks across, you get your studs and run them down the back of his Achilles.
And Ronnie
and
did that.
And then you say, he walked in front of me, so what can I do?
Okay, children, if you're listening, Ronnie's book, How to Buckle Your Enemy, is available in all good bookstores.
I'm 3 feet away, Brendan.
I tell you, he's coming in next week. Tomorrow I'm going to wear my shin guards. Welcome, Dave Fanning. Dave, it's great to have you. I know you're a huge soccer fan.
Do you have
an opinion on this?
I would have an opinion that might go along with everybody else's.
Well, please tell us.
Okay, fair enough. What he did is obviously terrible and weird. It's the weirdness, though, that's given him a 4-month ban or whatever it is, right up till Halloween. Like, with all due respect, look at Roy Keane's book. Look what Roy Keane said after he went for a Halloween.
Well, I was trying to make that point.
Were you saying that?
No. Earlier on, I made the point that it mightn't have been a bite, but within the game, there are still people who would go out and say, I'll buckle him.
Yeah, and he waited 2 years to do it. He did a Halloween, never played after that again. And then he's proud of it in his book, saying, I'm glad I did this and I have no regrets. But I would rather get a bite on my neck through my the football jersey, get a tetanus injection afterwards, then have a thug running around the field after me, knowing damn well he's out to break my legs, and then he does it.
Mm.
I'd rather that.
That's yeah, good. But that okay.
That's an employee of mine.
And you
don't care.
And you probably would prefer that, but that doesn't really answer the question. Was it right or wrong?
I actually think even the bizarreness of it. I mean, I'll tell you. Here's a perfect one.
And just quickly, in Roy's defence, and I did read a book. In Roy's defence, he didn't intend to do what he did. He intended to let him know that he remembered it, but I don't think he intended to do what he did.
Okay, well, maybe for another day.
Roy, if you're listening, I love you.
The difference, though, is that for years there's been hard tackles in the game and there's been leg-breaking tackles in the game. I think biting is something that Suarez has brought into the public arena in football that was never there.
Yeah, it's not as though everybody's going to start biting now, unless they take up Will Ferrell's thing for the American team.
It's been known for years. Johnny Giles beat Ronnie. There was tough boys on the pitch, Billy Brennan. That's the way the game was played.
Yeah.
But biting was something that was never
okay, but take a look at Neymar in the first game, Brazil, when they were playing Croatia. There was at least a 2 second gap where he looked at his neck, at Modric's neck, and then like that with his thing. Now, I'd still rather get a bite than get one of these in my neck in the middle of a match.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that could have killed him. I'm sorry. And what did he get? A yellow card. Did he get a 4 month ban? No.
Well,
I think it does, yeah. I'm only speaking from a sexual point of view. I can't talk about soccer. I know, but definitely horse worse than an elbow.
I'm glad I'm on this side of the table.
Aidan, what do you do in a club if you have somebody? I mean, obviously not. Clubs can't afford, I mean, but they come down to the amateur leagues, etc. Clubs can't afford psychologists. They can't afford to have a full-time. What do you do in a club if you have a kid that's particularly talented but also particularly troubled?
I think there are a number of things you can do. You have to teach them how to recognise the signs that they're getting frustrated and boiling over and can't focus. There are triggers for these things. It doesn't just happen.
Such as an
increasing sense of frustration, of arousal, of annoyance, of anger that comes. And it comes in all sports to all players. But some can control it because they've been shown how to do that. Others maybe discover things through experience. Former players can help too by giving example, by going in and talking to
this happened
clubs.
To me and this is
happened
how I
to me
and
here's
it.
How I changed.
Well, how do you in your own situation reconcile that you want players in one sport to be in a particular way, but the likes of coaching, you know, talking to the Irish rugby team, for instance, you don't want to be saying to them, now be gentle.
No, but at the same time, they're common to all sports. There are certain principles. That's the whole where the science of it comes in. You can't play well if you're very highly anxious and aroused, no matter what the sport is. If you're a snooker player, you think you're playing well. You might run around like a headless chicken, but you can't play well. To play well requires a cool mind. Now, I agree, in contact sports, you have to be ready for contact. But that doesn't mean you shout at people in the dressing room or you punch the wall. You've lost control.
And you would see it in golf where you know, a player gets an eagle and he gets a particularly good score, and the one thing he has to do between that hole and the tee box is calm down.
But that's the point, that sports differ in their structure. In individual sports like golf, it is possible to move from one hole to the next and you have your caddy beside you advising you on what to do. In continuous high-tempo sports like soccer, you're much more relying on the player themselves to make that decision. And so you can't rely on players unless they've been coached and trained on how to do this.
I was going to say, have you had teams come to you and say, look, we want you to coach and train our players on how to keep calm when either under pressure
I worked with the Irish rugby team. And here's a good example of what I'm talking about. One of the kickers in the Irish rugby team had difficulty in playing in Lansdowne Road, as it was before the Aviva, because the crowd used to go silent just before he went to kick. Now, he was used to dealing with the pressure of shouting and roaring. The crowd were trying to be helpful, so they all went silent. And all it did was increase the pressure on him to kick.
It completely unnerved him.
Yeah. So if everybody's going, shh, all it means is the whole spotlight of the world is now on you. So he would have preferred if the crowd had continued. But there's an example of the crowd trying to help a player, and psychologically all it's doing was
the exact opposite effect. So how do you handle that?
You teach him through routines, to go through routine in training and practice, to go through his four or five steps. And once he goes through each step one at a time, it blocks out everything.
Sorry, Aidan, excuse me for just cutting across you there. Why do you need a psychologist or a brain fellow, whatever, to tell him the five steps? Why can't a coach go, why don't you go get your mind focused, get set on your kick, when you're going to kick it, where you're going to kick it?
I think they're separate things.
You're absolutely right.
And I think that the point you've just made, Ronnie, is what, the difference between psychology and a psychologist. All good coaches know the psychology of the sport up to a certain level through experience. But there are times when they might need a psychologist to explain that this isn't working anymore. Mm-hmm. For example, people used to think that if you shout at players before a game, it'll get them aroused, they'll go out and play well. Yeah. Now, any manager worth his or her salt knows, if you keep shouting at players, they stop listening to you. They don't listen. And if you're a manager, you might want to talk to a psychologist. How do I get my point across? Yeah. So you're right. It doesn't take a psychologist to teach you about the importance of a routine. But sometimes you may need a psychologist to help you when that routine isn't working anymore.
Mm-hmm. Ronnie, you did your coaching badges and you managed, and at some stage, I hope, will someday manage Ireland. And as John is
That's why I'm talking to John.
Yeah, John is sitting beside you there. Let's just put a little plug in for you, that you are available and have been for a long time. the point I'm making is that you've done all your coaching badges. You've done, you know, did you have to have any, when you were doing your coaching training, was there any psychology involved in it whatsoever?
No, never.
Do you not think it should be?
Well, I think it was down to the manager. It was man management back then, wasn't it?
It was man management. A lot of self-management as well.
Psychology has been used in soccer right back as far as 1958, and that surprises a lot of people. Brazil had a team psychologist when they won the World Cup in 1958 in Sweden.
Not for Pelé, they didn't have a stretcher.
Yeah, Pelé, the interesting story about that, however, is that the psychologist was good up to a certain point, but he actually recommended that two players didn't play. Pelé and Garrincha.
Garrincha, yes.
And these are two of the greatest players who ever played.
Yeah, but I can see why.
Because he thought they weren't suitable. Yeah. Pelé was too young and Garrincha was untrustworthy.
I don't know if they had a psychologist, but for similar reasons, in the 1966 World Cup, probably the greatest striker at the time in the United Kingdom, Jimmy Greaves, was never played. He was left on the bench. I think for similar reasons, in that it was just...
But he got injured early on, didn't he? And Jeff Frost had a great run.
The likes of Matt Busby, Bob Paisley, Shankly, Ferguson. These people were fairly... These are psychologists themselves. Yeah. They're the things that they, get, that they can get out a fella so much. Alex Ferguson must be the best one because the squad of players he had last year, how he got them to win the league by 11 points is beyond me.
It's man management and
getting into people's head. Bob Paisley could get into someone's head, just some little thing on the pitch that will help them.
Did you experience that first time? Did you ever get a situation where you know Paisley talked to you and you came off going, I didn't know I could do that?
No, not that. But Bob Paisley said to Kenny Dalglish one day, the goalkeeper comes off his line, and that just meant to Kenny that the goalkeeper might step a bit too far out. Kenny, ball came to him early on, didn't look good, just chipped it. Keeper was off his line. Yeah. Now that's.
See, I don't think that's psychology.
Sort of,
I think that's just
in
giving
his head
him a tip.
To say something.
Well, Sir Matt was great. Sir Matt used to call a player in. Shea Brennan lived with me. And Sir Matt said, "How are you think you're playing?" Well, not great, but that's okay. He said, "You're dead right. I'm going to drop you." It's obviously his way of dropping a player.
But he could let him tell you that he wasn't playing great.
So the player told you that he couldn't complain.
Ferguson is on record, actually. He had some interesting motivational tricks. He said there's a difference between self-motivated players, and he said you leave them alone.
Yeah.
And there's other players who need to be given causes. And he said, you create those causes by us versus them. Yeah. So he would pick some players in the squad who he thought actually needed some motivational incentive. And he'd say, they don't rate you as a player. This is your chance to prove them. Or they're all against us. This is our chance to do it. So he had different ways of dealing with different players. And that's psychological. All based on his understanding of what made each of those players tick. And I don't think you can be a good manager at any level if you don't understand the psychology of each of your players. If you assume they're all the same, you're headed for failure.
But
they're not all the same.
Doesn't that apply to all management?
Yeah, I think so.
It applies to all
but my point is that good managers should never be afraid to seek advice from other people from time to time. And in sport, in soccer particularly, there is a culture of not getting people from outside for some reason. I don't know why that is, because it doesn't apply in individual sports like golf or tennis, where people are very clear on the need for specialist help. Soccer is a peculiar culture in that sense. People think they can do it themselves. You know, they've been through it, and that's fine, but that only works up to a certain level. There are times when you need outside help.
Yeah. Dave Fanning, does RTE have a resident psychiatrist, and if not, why not?
I'll tell you, they could do it one all right. Absolutely. No,
listen,
I think
we're here.
It's the self thing that you mentioned earlier on.
Well, it is, you're expected to look after yourself?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's every man for himself and every woman for themselves.
There's no courses here in RTE for these old guys to get together and say, look, guys, we need to talk about the pressures that come in.
My emails are down at the moment, so I've no idea. Actually, maybe I missed them.
Listen, guys, just excuse me for saying I talked to Dave. They were here. It's just not a great day for jazz and blues fans.
No, well, yeah, well, I'd go more soul and R&B and all the rest, but Bobby Womack, yeah, who really is a legend up there with Wilson Pickett, Sly Stone, Ray Charles. In fact, he was with all of those guys in the 60s big time. He died yesterday at the age of 70, yeah.
Expected?
In one way, possibly, yeah. He's had lots of complications over the last few years. He's had ongoing Alzheimer's the last couple of years in some ways, although in the last bunch of months in particular.
So give us a bit of pedigree, that's something that we might
recognize. Yeah, I mean, from the 1960s, he would have been well known from about 64 onwards, although he was in a band with his brothers and all that well before that and had hit records. Although they were called the Valentinos.
The Valentinos, yeah.
Which wouldn't have been that well known necessarily. No. But one of the things in the 60s was, especially in the blues boom in Britain, was that an awful lot of people who are white and good-looking and Eric Clapton age and all
leave
the rest
me
of,
out of this
and the Rolling Stones and all the rest of it would have stolen the music from Black America. And so a perfect example would be that Bobby Womack wrote a song called It's All Over Now.
The Rolling Stones.
1 month later after he brought it out, the Rolling Stones brought it out, and of course it was number one all over the world, and nobody ever heard Bobby Womack's version. So that's a good example of what was going on. He was also a great player, as in a session player, and he's on loads of different songs people don't know about. He was also a backing singer, and he was like a star not in his own right until he became a star in his own right. For instance, Suspicious Minds by Elvis Presley, that's Bobby Womack's guitar.
Wow.
For instance,
Dusty Springfield.
Yeah, Dusty Springfield, for instance, her big album was called Dusty in Memphis in 68. The big song on that is Son of a Preacher Man. That's Bobby Womack on that as well. Do you remember Pearl after the album Pearl?
Pearl's a singer.
No, not that one.
Yeah,
Pearl, the album by Janis Joplin, and the song on it called Mercedes Benz. That's actually based, are you ready for this? On Bobby Womack's car. That's another story. But anyway, his life is just the weirdest life ever. It's actually kind of frightening. It's like it becomes Woody Allen after a while. First of all, Sam Cooke is the most famous soul guy around the time of 64, and Bobby Womack married Sam Cooke's wife 5 weeks after Sam Cooke died, and he was ostracised for that terrible thing to do. He then had an affair with her daughter, let's get this right, he being the stepfather, so it's very Woody Allen at this stage. That daughter joins up with his brother, who then marries her, and they become Womack and Womack. Love Wars was a brilliant single that they had out some years ago. And like, a lot of people wouldn't necessarily know a lot about Bobby Womack if it wasn't for the Pet Shop Boys bringing him back. Not the Pet Shop Boys, that was to Dusty Springfield.
If it wasn't
for Blur bringing him back, and that's Damon Albarn, who produced his recent album. He's got a new album just on the way. Rod Stewart's already recorded for it, Snoop Dogg, Stevie Wonder, and he's like well known for Across 110th Street.
I need
Street.
A happy ending here, Dave. Did he die penniless?
There is no happy ending, I'm afraid. I'm sorry.
He didn't die penniless, did he?
But he was happy in terms of the fact that he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 4 years ago, and he's proud of the fact that now he's been accepted back into a thing that he thought he was kicked out of in 64, 65. But he's also had huge hits down through the decades and had a pretty bad life in terms of drugs and bad family stuff and everything. He had a 4-month-old son who died and then put him back into drugs as well. His personal life is truly bizarre.
I swear to God, Dave, every time I speak to you about music or anybody in music, I need an oxygen mask. You are amazing. Dave Fanning, thanks for joining us. John Delaney, Ronnie Whelan and Aidan Moore, and thanks very much for joining us. We're just going to stay. Are you going to stay? Don't go anywhere. I tell you what it is, we've got somebody on. Oh yeah, this should be good. John, Ronnie, you'll have a great interest in this. We've got somebody coming into us now who says you should never retire. Come on in, please come in, sit down. Ronnie, how long are you retired from playing?
94.
94 years of age.
94.
1994. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was there with you for that. Yeah. I was there with you. John, you'll never retire, will you?
When I die, Brendan.
When I die. And Aidan, of course.
I love what I do.
Yeah, and that's really the point that Dr. Charles Euster, who's here with us. Charles, how are you? Very welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I'm actually delighted and honoured to be here.
The point you're making, and Ronnie is now gone. Ronnie has gone from playing professional soccer to being a commentator and a panellist on shows. John has been involved in soccer all your life. You grew up with that, John, didn't
Absolutely,
you?
Yeah.
And especially in the executive end.
Yeah,
Aidan's involved in sports psychology. And they all are saying that they will never retire.
Absolutely. Congratulations. You are one of the few. You are the people that I need.
Tell me the principle of not retiring. What about people who are just knackered?
Well, all they have to do is to learn something new. If they're knackered with their old jobs, They can learn something new, a new job, and start all over again. I must tell you a story about an 85-year-old man who decided to learn Mandarin at the age of 85.
Very hard instrument to
play. At the age of 87, he discovered he was so proficient that he went to China and opened a B&B for British tourists.
Completely at 85?
New, yeah.
What's your story?
What's my story?
Yeah, well, I mean, were you expected to retire? Were you? And you just said that you weren't.
Oh, I was a dentist.
Right.
And what happens when you get older? One of the first things that deteriorate is your finger dexterity.
Tell me about it. I know.
And my finger dexterity began to deteriorate at the age of 75, so I stopped at 75.
But that wasn't so bad, was it? 75 was a good age to hang on to with that. Oh, and you would need finger dexterity as a dentist. That's essential.
Absolutely. Okay. So at the age of already at the age of 59, I started a clinical newsletter on dentistry.
Okay.
Something that I'd never done in my life before. Okay. Started, joined a newsletter club in Washington, D.C., and learnt about the business and so forth. And so when I retired, I was able to continue until I was 82. And then because, first of all, I lost my wife in a tragic accident, and number two, I was frightened of the internet because of all the free information that was there, I decided to liquidate the newsletter, which was a terrible mistake. At the age of 82, and then for the next 8 years, I was unemployed, and my health deteriorated, and so I was extremely happy at the age of 90 to be offered a job at large fitness group in Germany, and they employed me for 2 years, and now I'm writing a book, and we are having discussions about developing training for older people, but I love.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I love that you said that one of the reasons for your strict fitness regime is your vanity. You're
absolutely
a very vain person.
Absolutely.
I'm looking for his professional judgment as far as his teeth.
No,
that's why we brought in a dentist. Aidan is a psychologist, and I want to get Aidan. Aidan, what's your opinion on that about retiring?
I think that there's a difference between the legal age at which people are recommended to retire, and the reality. A lot of people feel that they have plenty to contribute beyond the legal age.
Yeah.
And it's a pity that in some ways the law almost prevents people from continuing beyond that legal age. I mean, it's not based on any research that shows that things decline exactly at the age of 65. And even if they did, the most crucial thing is for people who are interested in something, the brain is very alert and aware while that interest beats. Why would you want to shut down?
Does this retirement thing come from the fact that we come from a previous age when working hard was really hard, and that it was the time to switch off and actually just relax?
Yeah, I think that there, to some extent, some of the manual aspects of work, like physical aging, mean that those are not performed as well as you get older, but most of what people do these days is mental, more than manual.
It is.
And
your mind can stay active
forever.
Dr. Euster, your mind will stay active forever and ever and ever. I can see how sharp you are. And wow. You're very good to join us in here this morning. I'm not going to keep you too long. I want to ask you, John, is it a good World Cup?
I think it's a great World Cup. Honestly, I think it's been...
You've been to Brazil?
I was out there for a week, saw three of the games. Plenty of goals. I think the Suarez thing is taken away for these couple of days. But when Brazil play this evening, that'll pass. I think it's been the best World Cup. First one I remember was 74. And it's been the best to date. Hopefully now with the knockouts, it kind of kicks on. Sometimes it can become a bit negative. But it's been brilliant for me. I think it's been a great World Cup.
Is it extraordinary, and does it say something, that Spain are gone?
Yeah.
England is gone. Italy is gone. Who else? Who else is gone?
Russia.
Russia's gone.
Yeah.
There's four of the biggest leagues.
Yeah, but we're looking at these people playing Champions League, Premiership, and we're saying how good they are. We don't look at Costa Rican league, or we don't look at Colombia.
But we don't look at them because they're not as big as our leagues. As those leagues I mentioned.
Yeah,
they're four of the biggest leagues in the world.
Yeah, but we're taking it for granted these are the best. They're not the best.
Should we bring back in the ban? Should we bring back in the foreign player ban and reduce it down to two?
I think you'd need to reduce it. I don't know if two, but then there's all sorts of laws that will say you can't do it.
All the clubs have to agree to all that sort of stuff. But look, no,
I think I saw a figure of 75% of players in the Premiership are foreign players, and if that's the case, and if you can buy in the talent, surely it detracts from the academies and bringing kids through.
The further reason behind that, Brendan, is there's now foreign owners of clubs and there's foreign managers. If you look at that, a lot of clubs now are not owned by the traditional Liverpools or Manchester United or whatever, so they're owned
Americans
by foreign
and Arabs and
bring in foreign managers who bring in foreign players. That's what's happened. That's how the game has changed. I remember, was it Tyson and Muir? Remember the first two they played with Ipswich years ago? First Dutch guys, and then Ardiles and Vila came in 81.
You remember that Spurs?
And we're saying, oh my God, listen, there's foreign players playing the league. Now it's the other way around. You know?
But I understand that. I know that's what's happening. What are we doing about it? I mean, everybody's getting into the same. The position we were always in Ireland was that the League of Ireland, unfortunately, went through stages where it wasn't strong enough to bring forward the class of play that we needed to play in the World Cup or in internationals. But I think England's getting to that stage now.
That's the point. Greg Dyke, the chairman of the FA, he's trying to get the Premiership clubs to agree to a lesser number of foreign players to come to for the good of British football, which includes ourselves then, because Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland ourselves are the direct beneficiaries of that. Our players, we've got maybe 25, 30 players in the Premiership at the moment, but not playing with the big clubs like Ronnie did in the past, apart from Everton. But a lot of our players are going down to the Championship and the divisions below as well.
Do you have any interest in soccer?
Yes.
Are you following this World Cup, the American adventure?
Considering Switzerland have gone through to the next round.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was...
Belgium.
The main interest... Well, I was, as a child, I went with my father to watch football matches, and we were always standing. We stood. I mean, there weren't any seats, and it was, you know,
it was
quite hard, and I understand. But the interest for me is the adrenaline rush. Now, for me, adrenaline rush is one of the most beneficial things that can happen to you. And if you watch football, you have an adrenaline rush. Now, I believe that, especially in old age, that the adrenaline rush is extremely important, and that is why I advocate competitive sports for older people.
Well, I'm not Dr. Charles Euster. I'm not going to ask you this question. I want to ask Aidan this question because it's purely for personal reasons. Aidan, retire or not retire, how long do we expect our sexual prowess to last?
I really couldn't comment on that, I'm afraid.
I just thought you might know.
That's what I got Viagra.
Ronnie, where are we going, World Cup boys? Where are we going from here? Who are we looking at? Who are we fancying?
I said Argentina at the start, and I've seen nothing to change my mind on that one. Germany look half decent. The French have looked good, but they've come through a weak group. The Dutch also look fairly good. I don't like Brazil. I didn't like the way they played. Everybody's saying they did this last year in the Confederations Cup, and they got stick for not playing well, and then won it.
That's exactly what I was going to say. And somebody else said a great thing on TV that everybody wants to play football like Brazil, except Brazil. They don't seem to want to play themselves. Yeah. John, is the American adventure, is it over?
Well, I'll tell you what, the great thing, first of all, about America, I've been over a couple of times recently. You live there now. Soccer's taken off over there.
Huge.
Like it never had before.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Spanish influence, but it really is. It's become a big sport there now. I'm delighted over that. It needs one more World Cup, Brendan. One more World Cup hosted in America. That's what it needs. One more World Cup, and I think it would become a really strong professional league then.
I think it could be just one more round in this World Cup, and it could kick it off.
Second highest viewing figures ever in America for the last couple of
years. Absolutely. Listen, I can't tell you the wave that's coming over to America, and we talk about that. Listen, join me tomorrow at 11 to 1. I want to thank all my guests for coming in this morning.